Hey, it's Bobby.
And this is Jared.
Here we are. Podcast, we're excited to have you on with us today. We are stepping into new territory today because we are actually, some of you actually might be able to watch this sometime soon. We are recording this through different technology, and we're recording the audio, so we'll see what happens. Because, you know, why not, right?
Yeah, that boggles my mind that someone wants to see what we look like. But actually, looking at you here on Zoom, it's working for me, Bobby. I think your beard is well groomed, and I think it brings a lot of trust to this situation. So, and also, look at me. I have a collared shirt, and I have a job. This is the shirt I wore at my actual paying job, where I provide a service to the young people of America. So,
well done, sir.
Yeah, I have to talk myself up because, I am a Christian person in a conservative, highly conservative community. And anytime I say something like, listen, maybe we shouldn't shoot each other with guns, everyone's like, socialist. Like, what's your problem, dude? And I have to drop my American brownie points all the time. I'm like, oh no, listen, taxpayer, military veteran, like, I say the Pledge of Allegiance. I mean, you know, I basically have to come out strong out of the gate like that. Because if I'm like, I don't know, maybe there should be some kind of program where we could pay old people's medical bills so they don't have to. And everyone's like, no. So
how do you want to care for people?
Right, I get that a lot, and it's just like, man, those funny ideas, you know. And I'm like, oh, I don't know what to say, man. I don't know what to say. So. That's when I have to just be like, listen, I'm an American too, guys. Get used to it.
Isn't that kind of a weird thing, right? People like instantly kind of forget that we're all Americans in the whole process, whether or not we're, I mean, it's like you have to be on one side or the other to be a true American.
Right. Yeah. You got to be in my political, right? Because what's more American than everybody thinking the same? You know,
the thing I love, like that it's interesting that the forgotten idea that there's actually more than one party too. So
right,
so people instantly jump into, well, you're speaking out against this guy, so you must be on the other side. It's like, well, remember that there's like several parties I can be a part of. Like, I could actually be Green Party. You don't even know. Right.
Yeah, that is the assumption, but I don't think Green Party makes people feel any better. I have voted Green Party. Can I just tell you? I don't mind telling you guys how I voted. I voted for Ralph Nader one time for president. I think Ralph Nader would have been a great president, and he was on the Green Party at the time. So,
all right. Well, hey, I mean, I honestly don't even remember. I mean, I remember him, but I don't remember if I even voted when he was running. I don't know.
Right. It didn't, that was the election where they said that he was stealing votes from Al Gore, that a vote for Ralph Nader is a vote for George W. Bush. And they called that the Nader effect. And actually, Ralph Nader said no one is owed votes. You have to earn votes by being a trustworthy candidate. So if they're voting for me, there must be something they don't like about you.
Yeah.
So, and he was right about that. So, right. But the guy got seatbelts put into cars.
That's it. Mm-hmm.
That was one of Ralph Nader's claim to fame. And I mean, like, actually like an inventor of a seatbelt. And then that seatbelt became like a requirement for cars. So, you know, Ralph Nader actually had done some stuff. So
probably because he lived in a lot of fear. He just didn't trust that in the process. And so,
right. And that's why he wanted to save the environment, you know, because just complete and total lack of trust that God was going to renew the earth no matter how badly we destroy it. Which you can laugh and cry at the same time, because there are some Christians out there who think like, man, trash the earth because God's going to make a new one. And listen, God is going to make a new earth, but I don't think that means give us license to be bad stewards of what he's given us now.
Right.
Little side note today.
Hey, I wrote a blog about that, actually.
Yes, you did, and it was good. And, you know, something that I didn't say last week that I just want to throw out there on the side. We're just going to revisit last week about how a very pro-life thing that you can do is care about the environment. And if you just look at who will suffer, who will die if we do not change our ways, the people of the future, maybe near future, you know, grandchildren even. Our grandchildren will know if we were wrong. We can talk about it all day right now and act like we know what's going on. We know the science. We deny the science, this and that. But if we do wrong by those future generations and ruin their planet before they get it, they will know if we were wrong. They will know what we did. And here's the thing. If you look at the sheer numbers of who will suffer, and it's very pro-life to be an environmentalist, then Greta Thunberg is more pro-life than the pro-life evangelical pastor preaching at your local church who is only pro-life in the sense that he's anti-abortion.
That's a heavy, heavy statement. You're right.
Because her work as an activist could be saving more lives than somebody who wants to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Right. Because again, we talked about last week, is statistically abortions are actually on the down slide. So
right.
We're seeing less and less. That means that there's less people or less babies being taken from the planet from that. Or even less moms losing their lives because they're trying to abort on their own. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, because I don't know what the stereotype is of the person who statistically is most likely to get an abortion, but usually it's somebody who is in poverty and it's not their first child. It's like the second or third child, and they know from their experiences with the first two children that this third child is going to be impossible to provide for. You know, and then there's, you know, maybe they've got a significant other, you know, a husband, boyfriend, partner that's helping as a breadwinner, and maybe they don't. But a lot of times it's somebody who, you know, is married actually, and they look at this third baby coming and go, we can't do it. And so then when people feel more secure that there's going to be medical care, that there's going to be, you know, a job, there's going to be an income to provide for these children, that's when they're more likely to keep the baby.
A whole lot, man. There's a whole lot to weigh out there. If people are willing to listen and willing to hear those stories and hear the statistics, I think there'll be a difference. But I think that, you know, it seems like it's a very cut and dry type of thing for so many. That's like, you know, it's either you're for killing babies or you're for saving babies' lives. There's no middle ground. Let's hear the whole story and then also let's expand upon what the pro-life.
Yeah.
The whole process. But and if you're listening to this now and you weren't able to listen last week, go back and listen last week's. Conversation. I think Jared shared a great story that he had interaction with a pastor.
I'll just add another thing, since we're getting into statistics today and we're getting into how church people vote. This might be a little preview of that, talking about environmentalism. In the late 60s, if you do the research, plenty out there on this, I could provide some links to where I've gotten these things later on the frankincense page. But if you look at the late 60s and you look at what was at the time the biggest Protestant denomination in the United States was the Southern Baptist Church. And the Southern Baptist Convention actually did do like surveys and things back then in the late 60s, early 70s to find out what people care about. And do you know that abortion wasn't even really on the radar for the Southern Baptist Convention? Now, if you were going to think about the stereotype today of somebody who's just blindly, blatantly anti-abortion, it's going to be Southern Baptists, right? That's going to be the stereotype of it. But in the late 60s, a lot of people didn't think it was an issue, weren't even really sure what it was. And in fact, what was becoming an issue in the late 60s, early 70s was, are you ready for this? Environmental issues. And that's why Richard Nixon, wanting to gain some goodwill from his constituency started the EPA. Richard Nixon started the EPA. Listen to that. And he said, give me environmental legislation and I'll sign it. He told Congress, you make environmental legislation, I'll sign it all day long. You know why? Because it was a win-win. Everybody loved it. So at that time, religious people, Republicans, weren't caring about abortion, were caring about the environment. Something changed.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's a real interesting transition. I wonder what brought that on.
I don't know. But this is not your grandpa's evangelical church, just saying.
Yeah, true, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the evangelical church, right, this is kind of where we're headed toward, because we are talking about how are the evangelical people voting, right? Because obviously we're on election season. We are just a few days away from the biggest election in our nation's history. At least that's how they want to paint it now. But I feel like every time it's the biggest election in our nation's history.
Is it maybe it is, though. You know, it's like maybe this is the biggest. I don't know. Definitely certain candidates have said this is the most important election of our time. I think for them it has to be. They're running. So.
Yeah. I mean, true. I guess it's one of those things where you're just like, I feel like they say this about, like, you know, all wrestling, boxing matches.
I did.
Biggest boxing match in the history of boxing. You know, it's like
they do.
Yeah. So
and you know they we do use a lot of hyperbole now in these unprecedented times. You know, and people keep saying like our nation is now more divided than ever, and I'm just like, what do you mean more divided than during the American Civil War when Americans were literally killing each other in cornfields?
Yeah. And the thing is, though, again, I think we spoke about this last week, maybe. I think you and I spoke about this, was the idea when Trump was referring to, where he kind of said like he's done more for African American people than maybe Abraham Lincoln, you know, has done more, but then there's him, and Joe Biden called him Abraham
right.
Lincoln as like a dig.
Right, Abraham Lincoln over here, you know.
It's one of those back and forth things. But the thing is, though, it's like I kind of look at it and I'm like, wait a second. Abraham Lincoln also was a part of the Civil War cause, and Trump has also said that if he doesn't win, that there will be another Civil War. And I'm like, dude, did you just hint at something to us? Like you're trying to rattle.
I know. I have a sad prediction, and I should by no means go on record as saying this, but I don't think, you know how there are Trump flags everywhere? I don't think they're going away. I think it's the new, I think it's going to replace the Confederate flag of this is a version of America that we want, and we are the people that want this. And I think in 5 years, you'll still see Trump flags, win or lose the election. 5-10 years from now, there'll still be people flying that flag. Just can't let it go. Like this is a movement for them. This is a bit of a breaking away from what they see as like America's gone off the rails, and they need to be part of this other America. In a way, that's kind of what the Confederacy wanted. You know, like we do not recognize this United States of America. We must be something else, the Confederate States of America. I think there's a little bit of a Trump States of America right now, but it's throughout, you know what I mean? It's people scattered throughout. And really the Confederacy and the Union was too. I mean, you had brother versus brother in that one, people from the same land. You know, we're right here in the core of it, West Virginia, where people were, you know, divided from their next door neighbors, truly father versus son, you know.
Not Western Virginia.
No.
Virginia.
But. No. We live here in, we were almost called Augusta. We were almost called Vandalia. Any of this would have been less confusing than West Virginia. But would you like to be a Vandalian right now? That'd be kind of cool.
That sounds kind of cool. It sounds kind of very Juliet-ish. Like
it is. Maybe it just sounded too Italian for people. I don't know. So
I don't know. But yeah, I like it anyway.
Good. Yeah.
But so today, let's get into our topic. So. Great intro conversation and jump back. But now here we are, the Lifeway Research. Lifeway Research com. You can go here, but Legendary Research did a poll, did a survey, did some research, because that's what they do. That's in their title. They did this thing dated September 29th. They sent out this report called "The Most Evangelicals Choose Trump Over Biden, But Clear Divides Exist." That is the title of this kind of survey that they sent out. Now, they shared a lot of reasons why evangelicals support Trump, and they share some reasons why people are supporting Biden. But there's some interesting stuff that we're going to look at. But I'll kind of share some of the stats they share. So I'm looking at it on my phone, obviously, because that's the way I read it. But it says evangelicals, by belief, are also twice as likely to identify as a Republican, 51%, and a Democrat, 23%. 1 in 5, 20% say they're independent. However, one of the interesting things that they shared was African Americans with evangelical beliefs overwhelmingly plan to vote for Biden, 16% to 19%. Among American evangelicals of other ethnicities, however, Trump has a 58% to 32% lead. So, compared to a survey that was done in 2016, more white evangelicals say they plan to vote for Trump than this time, 73% to 65%. However, more also say they plan to vote for Biden than said they plan to vote for Hillary Clinton, which is 8% to 10%. So those are interesting statistics. That's for the evangelical movement. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about was not the election issues, not the things that they're voting for, but what they said was, who do you hope your presidential vote benefits the most? That was a question that they asked. So they asked a question to them, to these people who said, when they're voting, who do they hope benefits the most? Not, you know, so it's not about like, not the person they're voting for, but the people who are going to be influenced. So are they voting for people in the future? Are they voting for people now? That kind of thing.
Right. What do they hope is the outcome, the results of it?
41% people nationwide who are like me. So when they are voting, U.S. with evangelical beliefs, registered voters with evangelical beliefs are saying 41% of them said people nationwide who are like me, they hope will benefit the most from this.
Okay.
Then 20% said me and my family.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the lower percentages, 15% people our country has failed, 9% people nationwide who are different from me, 8% people in my community or region, and then 7% not sure.
Okay.
But to think that 41% and 20%, the two highest percentages of the people surveyed, are sharing things, people who are like me and my family. Now, these are the people that they were hoping are going to benefit the most from who is elected, from the people they vote for.
Mm-hmm.
What is interesting to me, and what I think should be interesting to us if we're claiming to be Jesus followers,
right,
is how very me-centric the voting is.
Yeah,
we want people who are like me to benefit. We want me and my family to benefit. And then the low percentage is people who the country has failed to benefit, right? Like those are
right.
And when you look at Jesus' teaching, it feels like that's the antithesis of what Jesus actually spoke of.
It does. It feels like a flip.
Because when you look at, again, Matthew 16:24-25, if anyone should come after me, he must first deny himself, take up his own cross, and follow me, right? Deny himself. You hear Micah 6:8. God has shown you, oh man, what is good and what the Lord requires of you, to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly, right? So there's a lot of humility that's involved. You look at the Sermon on the Mount, the blessed meek, blessed of the, you know, the poor in spirit. Those who are very humble, the ones who aren't about themselves, but it's not about our glory, but God's glory, the ones who are not about their safety, but really this, the whole, caring for the whole creation, caring for all people. But then, this, from American evangelicals, is very much against the idea of others, in my opinion. Am I reading, do you think I'm reading that wrong?
I think you're reading that well, and I think it's interesting because I think a lot of Christians would say, I vote as a Christian, you know, and say, but what you're talking about is that if we were voting as a Christian, we would put first the marginalized people.
Yeah.
So actually, when you're reading that, like, we have to, I just want to say what I think of when you read that response of, you know, I want to help people like me, and I want to help, my family. I think of Delmar's cousin who turned them over to the police in the movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And the police are there, and he says, I'm sorry, Delmar, but they got this depression on, and I got to do for me and mine. So that's what I think of. And I'm sorry, but Oh Brother, Where Art Thou comes up a lot on this podcast, and I can't help it. Our governor of our state is literally Pappy O'Daniel from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou. Watch that movie if you don't know what I'm talking about, you know. But
I love come on. I love when you make that reference. It's so true.
What, so it is. It's Pappy O'Daniel.
So what they say at the what they say at the end of the survey says, those voting for Trump are more likely to say they hope their vote most about themselves and their family.
Mm-hmm.
And people nationwide who are like them. But Biden voters are more likely to say they are casting their vote so that it most benefits people who our country has failed.
Okay.
So again, right, this is where you got to wrestle with this, because evangelical people who are saying that Trump is God's president, I'm not knocking either side here, because Biden's people will say that he's meant to be this way or whatever. And if you look at here, that Trump voters are leaning more towards themselves, Biden voters are leaning more towards others, their neighbors.
Well, what if they see themselves as people that the country has failed? So that's why they're saying, you know, it's for me, or it's for me and my family. Because I mean, that's very much a part of the Trump narrative, is that he's a victim. Trump himself, he likes to play the victim. Like, the media is picking on me. You know, the liberals are out to get me. And unfortunately, a lot of things happen that can easily be spun around to make it look like people are after him. You know, the impeachment, all of that can easily be, you know, we could sort of take the focus off, did he break any laws, or did he violate, any standards of his office? Did he violate the Constitution? We could take it off of that and turn it into, they're just coming to get me. You know, a lot of these conspiracy theories are like, Trump's a victim and they're all out to get him. The whole, you know, BS QAnon thing is about that, you know. And I actually do think a fair amount of Trump supporters feel like, I'm under attack, like I'm being persecuted, like this is a war on my beliefs, and they're scared that when they see a protest on TV, or they see a riot on TV, they think that that's coming to their town to get them. I had a friend, and I started to scare me a little bit, but he posted something about, if you don't see any reason why you need to own an AR-15, it's on every news channel this week. And he was referring to, you know, a lot of the protests and Black Lives Matter demonstrations. And it really would kind of scare me. It sound like he was ready to shoot somebody. And, you know, I don't know if that's true or not, or if he was just reposting a meme. You can never tell with some folks. And, you know, but I do think that he would see himself as somebody that the country has failed, you know. Now for me, I don't feel that way at all. And I am by no means a middle-class person. My income is still technically lower class, like socioeconomically lower class. You know, I'm a school teacher. I'm the lone breadwinner in my house. But I think people would see me as somebody doing the best that I can, but I'm never going to be comfortable in the financial sense where I will be able to retire. I will never be able to afford something like taking my family to Disney World or something, which is like a common thing for some folks. But I do not look at myself as somebody the country's failed. I think, I'm somebody that the country has really succeeded for because, you know, I got my GI Bill. I was able to go to college, you know, and I could turn my whole life into this, pulled myself up by my bootstrap story, which it's not that at all. Everything I have, God has given to me, and you can just take it away at any time. Let me throw that out there. But I don't see myself as the country has failed me. I can easily turn to the right or left of me and see people that are really marginalized. Like their votes don't even seem to count when they say we need something. They can't get a big enough group together to say, let's vote so that they can get that thing, you know? One example to me is definitely Native American communities. I don't mean to paint them as victims, you know? They are, if I'm going to paint with a broad brush at all, I'm going to say this is a strong, resilient community with a lot to offer. But statistically, they are less than 1%. And I've said on this podcast before that, you know, there's really, I kind of got the idea from a poem by a Native American poet. And she was saying, you know, I count as less than one person because all Native Americans combined are less than 1% of the American population. That means if they want something or they need something, even as a group, even if every single tribe, which is completely diverse, actually gets together as one whole and says, listen, we're indigenous people, we're both the same. It's still less than 1%. They can't sway any election. So, but I look at that and I go, oh man, you know, I'm in a huge voting group. Like if I just go to vote with, you know, white, male, middle class, lower class, evangelicals, you know, I can join this huge horde of people and feel like my voice is heard. They're not able to do that. So really what I got to do is, you know, do the thing that, well, like Biden supporters are saying and go, listen, I'm going to try to benefit the people that the country has failed. Countries failed Native American people. There's no way around that. I mean, that historically that's true. That's still true today. And again, not trying to, you know, make them look like these victims. That just feels like a fact to me. Like, you know, they've been disenfranchised all over the place. And I mean, I look at something like, you know, the Standing Rock protests and people having dogs released on them, people having fire hoses sprayed at them in freezing weather. That happened in the 21st century. That's crazy to me. That's the people that the country has really failed. And it's not their fault. It's the country's fault.
Yeah. I think that's a very true statement. I think that we have to realize that the way that we vote, the way that we use our voice, is demonstrating really either our inability to recognize what's really gone on in history, right?
Yeah.
Our inability to see that history is about to repeat itself if we're not careful. That it can repeat itself really easily. Or also, it could be too, like how uneducated we are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, not very many people think about, oh, well, you know what? Like this happened, like just like, because when you talk to people about Martin Luther King and you talk about them about Salem, or not Salem, Selma, you talk about Salem.
Yeah, okay.
Salem too. Selma, you talk about, you talk about all these things that have happened. You talk about the Watts riots and they're like, yeah, but that was so many years ago. And you're like, no, it wasn't so many years ago.
Yeah.
How many years ago? It was like a couple hundred. No, it was not a couple hundred years ago. Right?
No, my dad was in high school when this stuff was happening. You know, Selma.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Your grandparents experienced this. Some of your parents experienced this. And we have people who are totally separated from that and don't think that it's still happening. Speaking of this, do you watch This Is Us?
No.
Okay. Well, we do. Okay. Sorry. I know you watch documentaries. You get all smart. We watch This Is Us.
No. I do watch documentaries, but when I'm meaning to be entertained, it's much less intelligent than This Is Us, rest assured. Yeah. So.
Drunk History. That's kind of where I go.
I love Drunk History, but even you can learn from Drunk History. But my wife and I, we have this thing where we are going to watch if we have a little free time in the evening, done being intellectual, we're going to turn on to the dumbest thing possible. And favorite movie in my house is Talladega Nights, if that gives you any impression. So.
Shake and bake. Yeah, that's
great. Shake and bake.
All right, so, well, this is us. Okay, so season premiere, this is us, was just a couple days ago. My wife and I watch it the day after, then you watch it on Hulu because, you know, we don't have regular cable. But so that's what we do. And it's like a day thing for us, which is always nice. Well, this last episode, the season premiere came out, and it's set in modern day, right? It's set in like today. So they're wearing masks. They're talking about COVID. They're talking about the results of COVID. Well, for the premise of, for those who may not, are not familiar with it, those who don't watch it, it's a story of three siblings, two brothers and a sister. One brother's an African-American who was adopted into a white family in Pittsburgh, where the father passed away in a fire. And so you see all this stuff kind of play out, right? And if that seems like a spoiler to you, dude, this is six seasons in, you should have been watching. But what happened in this episode was they show the George Floyd murder.
Oh, wow.
And the George Floyd, yeah, they want, like, the African-American brothers watching it, Randall is his name. And he's watching, and then his wife and his kids are watching the news break, and his sister, who is white, is sending him messages like, we're at a protest, and what's the next African-American place we can, charity we should donate to, you know? And he's like, okay, whatever, you know, and he's kind of getting exhausted by it. Well, long story short, they come at the end of it, and he basically says to her, because she's like, I don't know what's going on, and he says these words, he says, this isn't the first time this has happened. We've been seeing African-American men and women being murdered, being killed by police officers, being beaten by police officers, being brutalized,
victimized,
and being oppressed, and being pushed around and pushed aside. And they're marginalized. But this is the first time in 40 years that they're celebrating their 40th birthday together.
Wow.
That's right. They're all the brother and white brother and sister are twins. And Randall was born on the same day, around that time. So they're all celebrating their 40th birthday day. And so he's saying, in 40 years, you've never asked me if everything's okay. You've never spoken to me about this before. You've never asked me questions. You've never thought about the fact that I'm affected by this. But now you're asking me. He's like, why? What are you sorry for now? Okay. Like, why all of a sudden are you sorry?
That's a fair question.
Very fair question. It was so good. But then, in the middle of it, though, they kind of go flashback to Randall's mother and father, who were drug addicts, and there's some stuff going on there. But when they flash back to them before Randall's born, they talk about how there's oppression going on. Now the CIA brought heroin into the black communities. And all this stuff, right? They start talking. They're like talking about, and the funny thing about it is, it's funny but sad, is that this is like 1960 something, and we're in 2020. It isn't too far away.
That no,
similar things are happening. And then Randall flashback. He's talking to an African American boy who's the boyfriend, daughters, I think it is, and he's telling him about a football player whose brother was killed. The Pittsburgh Steelers, a real Pittsburgh Steelers football player, had his brother killed.
Yeah.
And the footage was on TV, better like the news, and he had to watch it. He's like, but I had to watch it alone because he's a white family. They didn't know how to talk about it. And so he's watching it on TV as a young man, and he's having to figure out how to wrestle through this whole thing by himself. Why am I saying that now? Is because the reality of it is that when we see Black Lives Matter, when we see all these things happening, a lot of times we're just looking at it as what's happening today. When we don't look at the big timeline and realize that this is the culmin at the end of the fact that, not really the end, but this is this is kind of the peak, in a way, of what has been building up for from so long to now. And so when we vote thinking that we're voting against Black Lives Matter or voting against these issues, what we're saying is we're ignoring what has actually brought us to the point of needing a Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the disconnect, because we're caring more about ourselves than our neighbor. That's what I'm reading here, is that we're caring more about people who are like me. So now when you think about it, the white evangelicals are the majority who are voting for Trump, and they're the majority who are saying they're going to vote for people who are like them. That speaks a lot, right? That carries a lot of weight, because what they're saying is, white Americans, we're voting for white evangelicals, and we're voting for the evangelicals. So we aren't really caring too much about the necessity of caring for our African American brothers and sisters, or people of color who've been oppressed. The security of the border is an issue. Border security, economic security, all these things that are really not what the Bible tells us to care about, right?
Yeah.
Like, we care about economic security, but it's funny that when you look in the Old Testament, one of the biggest jubilee is when things are forgiven after like 7 years, right? And people are saying, look, like your taxes and any debt you owe forgiven. Why? Because God didn't want people to be tied down by their finances, and he wanted to tell people, look, be fair with each other. Be fair with each other. So that's that. And then it goes into border security. Well, guess what he was also telling these people in the Old Testament to do? The money taking, and even don't even take any extra grain off the ground. Why? Because that's going to be for the people who are traveling in over your border.
Yeah.
Right?
The gleaning.
But it's like, for some reason, American Christianity, we've got into this whole thing of, it's all about me. It's all about
what
I get, what I gain, and we're no longer considering the needs of those around us. And that's what...
Wow, I'm so glad. That's so amazing you brought up gleaning, by the way, as like that example. I've never heard anybody put it that way, but it really... I'm sorry I interrupted you, but what got me in my heart right then when you said that is that, you know, God's commandment was that you leave some stuff out there in the fields. Don't go back through and pick it all again so that the poor could come and glean. And what really strikes me is that is what Jesus himself and his disciples ate off of when Jesus came and walked the earth. That's what he lived on when he was doing his public ministry. So you leave a little behind for the poor, you literally are giving it to Jesus. He himself took it, picked it with his own hand, and ate it.
And when you see too, he says, when I was hungry, you fed me, when I was naked, you gave me clothes, when I was in prison, and they're like, well, when did we do that? When you do it unto the least of these, you did it unto me. We forget. like, so that means that we should be careful. This is going back to that pro-life idea, right? When I was hungry, you gave me food. It wasn't socialist ideals. It was, look, someone's hungry. We put our resources together and we make sure they're fed. They're naked.
Yeah. It's something that like a Christian ought to be calling the love of God. But even if you're not a Christian, you might just call that human decency.
Right. And then we talk about the prisoner. Well, the prisoner is there. Like, we're visiting them. We're caring for them. It's much more, we got a prison ministry. We go and we pray with them a little bit. It's like, no, you're finding out about their families and you're saying, how can we connect with their families? Because you have kids.
Yeah.
Kids who are without their dad or without their mom right now. You have, like, and this is a big undertaking, right? But the thing is, and that's why I think so many people shy away from it. But again, if from a pastor's perspective, and you say this honestly and openly, as a church planter, looking at my church budget going, crap, I wish we could do a whole lot more. But if Christians were to actually be putting their money, or time into the ministries, right, and actually making it possible to be able to do all of that, because that's the thing, right? There are people with the heart, but we don't have the time or the resources, or they're not willing to give the time or the resources to make something like that happen. to care for the prisoner family, right? That's that's a big push, and that's a challenge, right? It's a challenge because it's like, man,
And you can vote in a way that cares for prisoners. You could give prisoners the vote so that they could vote for themselves. But actually, many states, ours included, have legislation that takes away voting from convicted felons. We decide that they don't get that right. So not only do we not, if you're a convicted felon in West Virginia, you've lost your right to vote. You can't vote. And I learned this from convicted felons, you know, people who were out had actually, I'm not talking while they're sitting in prison, they can't vote. I'm talking about they have served their time. They're, you know, they've been through parole and everything. They're back in the workforce, trying to anyway, because it's hard to get a job. But I you know, I've actually worked with people, and I said, who are you voting for? Just make a conversation with the guy. He says, I can't vote. So I'm a felon. I can't vote. And that's when I learned all that. And so not only are we like not voting in a way that can help prisoners, we've taken away their ability to even vote for themselves.
And that's an even more heavy tactic too, right? Because, okay, get out of prison. You can get back in the workforce. We're going to take taxes out of your check.
Right. Okay?
But we're not going to allow you to vote into the system that is taking the taxes from your check.
Right. And that keeps you off of a jury. This by the way is why in some states the sort of evil underhanded thing that happens is, you know, more black people are likely to be convicted of a felony, and it's because the idea is let's get their rights taken away. And I'm talking about people who did the same crimes as white people, but, you know, a white person might, you know, find more sympathy with a jury and be thought of as an upstanding member of society. And then they get to go back out there and they get to keep voting. But if we can just, this maybe hopefully is happening less in this country, but that was the organized plan in some states. You didn't even need like a conspiracy theory to say this is happening. People just know, like, you know, black in some states automatically guilty. And part of the incentive to say automatically guilty is to get them to a place where they no longer have these rights to serve on juries, to vote, to actually sway elections and make things that could actually happen to benefit their communities.
I think I read that a little bit in that Rethinking Incarceration.
Okay.
I think it's Dominic Dubois. I might be saying the wrong name wrong, but I think it's like
Well, when you see that Du Bois or Dubois, you just have to ask him which is it, because you never know.
Yeah, I've never met him, so I don't know. But I know he's affiliated with the nominee.
Right.
I've never had a chance to meet him.
You got to find a podcast where he's interviewed and then say it how they say it. That's the way I sound intelligent. Find someone else who said it first.
I got to track that down. I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out and then fix it in like 5 podcasts from now. But
yeah.
But man, I think what we leave here realizing is that we have a responsibility to vote for in our country. We do. If you are able to do it, you have a responsibility to do it. But we need to be a little bit more aware of what the scriptures tell us. And be voting around what the scriptures tell us, not what we're told the scriptures tell us. Because honestly, people say the scriptures speak so much about abortion. It doesn't.
I know.
They use scripture to make it sound like it is, but it's not.
I know, like Psalm 139.
What was it? The idea of if anyone causes these little children to stop.
Yeah, Jesus. Jesus said if anyone who harms one of these little children, it'd be better for them to have a millstone tied around their neck and thrown into the sea than what's actually going to happen to them.
Yeah, and people have used that to say, well, look, if you harm one of these little children, that's what it means. But in reality, the language that's really used is causing them to to go in a different direction, to sin against God, to speak hateful words, to buy into ideology
behind the scripture. Actually refers to children of all ages. And I would tell you, you know, when I see the pictures of people, you know, that we have bombed, there's a famous video of a little boy, and he's in shock, and he's a 5-year-old boy, and he's bleeding from the head. And I know that the American government bombed his neighborhood. We harmed one of those little ones. Same kind of kid Jesus is talking about.
Yeah. I've seen a meme floating around saying, before you cry out about little kids in cages, care about the babies who've been thrown into trash cans at Planned Parenthood. It's an ugly meme. It's true at the heart of it, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, yeah, like if you're gonna be upset about one thing, you should be upset about all of it. But
yeah, I don't think it's totally true because it says before you care about this. I'm like, how about both of them at the same time? I don't know why it's either or, you know. And I would say, that I actually do. Even if they're from another country, even if they don't speak English, you know, you can't put a kid in a cage, man. You just can't. That I don't know what makes Christian people look at that and go, good job, Mitch McConnell. You know, I don't know what that is crazy to me.
But again, if we're going to use that scripture, if anyone should cause a little one to stumble, then we need to be realizing that we're going to be held accountable for that.
Yeah.
We're saying, we can't vote for a party that's going to be okay for abortion. Well, you're going to vote for a party that's okay with putting kids in cages and putting kids in cages that they're not going to be able to know their families because now they're separate from their parents and over 500 of them are trying to figure out where the parents are.
Yeah.
Eyes about saying, they came with cartels. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. They came with parents. They came with people. And otherwise, the people that they came with would have been arrested, right? There would have been something more to that. And so don't try to cover that up by making it lies. Be honest with the fact we failed on that.
Yeah. But
if you're, like, if we're going to try, like, one of the things, and I go on a tangent about this because I know we're running out of time. One of the things that ticks me off so much about what I'm seeing from both sides who claim to be Christian is that we're not holding equal accountability.
Right.
Go ahead and say, look at this guy over here.
Right.
Like, I've seen people say, Joe Biden is a creepy old man.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because he has weird pictures that people have caught that are misconstrued on some points and some are real. I don't really know. But then we're also not, but then when Trump is caught on tape saying, let's grab a girl by her boob. And they're like, that's just locker room talk or whatever.
Right. Make it seem, that's what blew my mind about the 2016 election was just how blatantly Christian leaders could be like that, you know? And then I had to look at people that all my life, I thought that they were lovers of truth. And it turns out they're not lovers of truth because cheat to win, lie to win, make excuses for sin, that's not a lover of truth.
And we have to have an equal playing field. And I think that when we are looking at it from both sides, it's like you can't one side over the other because they're both flawed. I mean, regardless, human beings are both flawed. And I'm gonna
give a
little hint to my sermon this Sunday because I've been working on it and praying about it, and I feel like this is where I'm going. But one of the things that I'm realizing is like you can't look at Trump as our savior because again, the only savior that we have is Jesus. You can't look at Biden as the only one who's going to reconcile our country because in reality, we, the church, have the ministry of reconciliation. So you're looking
at
men as holding things that really scripturally, there's only one person who holds the title of savior, and there's only one body that's supposed to be a reconciler, and that's us as the church. And so we're looking at these two men to carry things that really it's our responsibility and Christ's responsibility. The thing about it is that when we're doing that, we're losing the fact that we're supposed to also be loving our neighbor in the process. And once we're saying these hateful things about everybody on each side, whoever wins, the people on the other side are no longer going to have any credibility with the opposite side, right? I mean, that's what's sad about this, is that because we've so much tension and hatred toward each other, that Trump wins, his people are going to carry on with the Trump thing, but these people on the other side are going to look at them completely like, yeah, well, you're hateful, and this is what you're going to carry on. And then when Trump is out of office, after 4 years from now, if he wins, 4 years from now, people who are hateful and filled with the Trump whatever, they're going to lose all credibility. Right? They're going to lose all value in the eyes of people who are on the other side, who've been mistreated, who've been depressed, who've been pushed down, who've been beaten up, who've been told that they're stupid, who've been called libtards, who've been told all those name callings, all the things that you see on flags saying, making liberals cry, the ones they say, you're a snowflake, all that stuff. After Trump wins this election, after 4 years from now when he's no longer in office, you're going to have to carry those words that you said toward people who are on the other side. And on the flip side, if Biden wins, after 4 years from now, all the things that you said about the people who are on the other side, we're still going to be here living in this country. They're going to go off and play golf. They're going to go off and do lectures and make money doing lectures, and they're going to be sitting in their mansions or possibly on their deathbeds because they're like up in age anyway.
Right. Hopefully not. Thanks for handling the elephant in the room.
Yeah, I mean, this is real life, right? I mean, 76 or
76. Yeah, they're old. They're old.
Who knows what's going to happen?
And not dismissively. We're not saying that dismissively because old people are capable. We're just saying that you only got so many years on this earth. That's all we're saying.
I'm saying real talk.
So,
but after that, though, they're gone. We're still here. And we're going to have to still look at each other in the eye. We're still going to have to go to work with each other. We're still going to have to be lifting each other up. And if we remember, if I look over and I remember how hateful you were, I'm not calling you. And honestly, I'm going to have to pray hard about me helping you. Like, I'll be honest. Can I be honest about that? I mean, like, that's so hard for me to say.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be praying so hard that I don't have such a hard heart when I see somebody who spoke such hateful words, and if I'm willing to step into a right relationship with them. Because I'm going to have to forgive them for their hatred. I'm going to have to forgive them for their attacks on Facebook. I'm going to have to forgive them for calling me names and saying that I'm not a pastor because of whatever, right? I mean, like, those are things that are like, that's what I'm praying for right now. I'm praying through right now because I'm praying for 4 years down the road. I'm not praying for Wednesday of next week. I'm praying for 4 years down the road when all of these people are gone and I have to be able to look at the people on the other side and say,
yeah,
here I am.
So. Wow. Amazing. You probably brought it up already. Just as a side note here from the stats that you're reading from the survey that we just looked at if you show black Christians or black evangelicals, it's almost like the same number it's the same percentage of white voters white evangelicals voting for Trump, the same percentage of black evangelicals voting for Biden. It's like completely flipped. And one thing that I want to say is completely different research, but if you look at Pew Research Center, which I get on there, I kind of like stats like that. It just kind of teaches me things and I learn things. And one thing is I just like to look at religion statistics on there. And when they asked white Christians, how important is God to you in your daily life, talking about praying, like you're dependent on God every day for your existence. And it's about 40% of all white Christians or Christians who are white, if I want to be, more exact, Christians who are white, say it's 40% say that God is important in their daily lives. Do you know what it is for Christians who are black? It's double that. It's 80%. So, the most devout group of people, maybe the people praying the most are in this country are Black Christians. And I am, that's been a statistic for a long time, actually, consistently. And I have a theory, and obviously there's no way to know what God's thinking, but I have a theory that because Black Christians have been marginalized throughout the history of this country, I'm convinced that God gave them a double portion of his spirit, same as he was there for the Hebrews when they were oppressed and enslaved. You know, he was there for Black Americans when they were oppressed and enslaved. And the way that Elisha was given a double portion, well, we think he asked for that. I assume he got it, that Elisha got a double portion of Elijah's spirit. Elijah said that was hard to do. I actually think that, like, you know, God just looked at Black communities and Black churches and said, you get twice my spirit. Because every time somebody in this country says, you are not a man or you are not fully human, God says, not only are you fully human, you are made in my image and you are my child twice over. And another statistic, since I'm talking race, I just found this out just on the side. But sometimes they ask like different communities. And do you know Latino people are the people who claim to care about the environment the most? It's only like 40% of white people say that environmental issues are like a big deal to them. And when they interview people who identify as Latino, or Latina, they say it's like 90% of them say environmental issues are important to us. So just thought I'd throw that out there. There you go. So,
I mean, there's a lot of reasons for that, but yeah, I mean, like, it's definitely, yeah, I think that it's a real life deal, you know? So, and again, if you ever want to look at a little selfless or selfish plug, I guess you could say, a shameless plug, you can go to bobbybenavides.me and you can look at my Why Should You Care? Or Why Should We Care series, part one, part two, part three. And I think part two is about the environment.
There you go.
But yeah, little plug. But, well, man, listen, you know, this is going to be our last, or not last episode, but our last episode before the election. So,
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're back together 2 days after the election, as long as we're all, you know, as long as Jesus hasn't returned and burning. I don't know.
Like, Bobby, I just want to say, is there another Christian podcast out there on the eve of the election talking about this aspect of voting? I sincerely doubt it. I think we just are on a whole nother level here.
I think we are the only ones ever to talk about.
I hope people can sense the sarcasm in my voice. Oh my gosh. You know what they say, man, pride goeth before a fall. If only we could get all the politicians to understand that.
Yes, very true. Very true. Well, with that, man, great conversation again, as always. I love having our conversations, and I feel like we grow together.
I do too, man. Dude, I always learn something. I get on this podcast and sometimes just have an epiphany having these conversations with you. Today, it was the thing about Jesus gleaning. I was like, oh my gosh, you know? Yep.
It's all there, man, all there. But we have to look at it. And actually, Rick Warren did a great interview talking with Cam and Strang from Relevant Podcast or Relevant Magazine.
Okay.
And yeah. He was talking about one of the things he said was a telling thing. He said, Christians are biblically illiterate. He said, like, basically, that's what he said. It's like there's many that are just so biblically illiterate, like they don't know what the Bible really says. They're told the Bible says certain things, but unless they really read it, they aren't really grabbing onto the truth of it all. So, and Rick Warren is a very whole life idea. Like, he's not that's his term actually. He says he's not really, he's from womb to tomb. And there's like whole life thinking. And so, which is something I think I'm going to be, grabbing onto myself, is this whole life mindset and the teaching, and
yeah,
from that perspective. But anyway, it's a great interview. You can actually go to Cameron Strang's unedited podcast and you can listen to it there.
Cool.
Little plug for another podcast. And the link in our show notes. I don't know yet, but anyway. But let me see. Last thing I want to say, though, and this has nothing to do with our conversation, should have probably said this in the beginning, and for those who stuck around to listen to this whole thing, dude, we've passed over 3,000 downloads on our podcast.
On Frankincense?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, we have surpassed. Last time we checked, it was over 3,030 something, I think, now. And so, thank you, listeners, for getting us to that.
Thank you, listeners. Yeah, every once in a while, I get a little feedback. In fact, just this week, a listener sent me something and said, "Hey, I heard you guys kind of talk about this on your podcast. Here's another podcast that you might like." And they were right. I loved it. It was a podcast about suburban mom voters in Ohio getting political and turning against Donald Trump.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you think about communities that get marginalized, you know, these folks were very offended. These women were very offended that Donald Trump felt like he knew what, you know, the average middle class mom wanted, you know, and spoke very condescendingly about it. Like he thinks they want him to protect them from the outside world and protect them from protesters and illegal immigrants and stuff like that. And they got together and said, "That's not what we want. You don't understand us. Quit talking for us." You know, and it was like, whoa. I didn't know that was a movement, but here you go. So,
well, recently he came under fire for saying that he told women that, "Hey, we're getting your husbands back to work."
Right. Well, and that's it. And how do you feel, you know, you're a woman working full time, you know, and you and your husband are working full time, and that's how you're keeping, because we you know, most households have to be two income. That's just how our economy is set up now. And you're busting your butt, and then you get told, like, "Hey, you know, we're getting your husbands back to work." You know, like somebody thinks we're, you know, it was a very short period of time in the 1950s when you could just like have the housewife sitting at home, you know, very short period of time. In the 1800s, women were working, man. Farms took everything everyone had, working full time all the time, you know, and it was like maybe 10 years we had that whole husbands go to work at the factory and the wife stays home. That was like 10 years.
I mean, you see in the Old Testament, I mean, women work in the fields, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But whatever. I mean, again, it's if you want to look at history, if you believe that sort of stuff.
If you believe the piles and piles and thousands of books, you know, on the library shelves, which people apparently don't. It's crazy.
Yeah, facts. What are those, dude?
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway.
Good podcast for – I want to make my podcast recommendation, speaking of history. Listen to Code Switch. In the last few weeks, they've been talking about elections, and they went – Code Switch is awesome, but they went – I can't remember if it's Code Switch or Throughline. Throughline and Code Switch to me are like brother and sister in podcasting. If you listen to those, you're getting such a good – taste of like American history, but Throughline, it's they're actually the ones that did this misrepresentative democracy series in the last few weeks, and they just really had this really fascinating episode about how voting used to take place, and George Washington used to buy alcohol for everyone, and all the white landowners who were registered to vote would come out to like Mount Vernon and have a big party. And they actually have the list of like all the alcohol that George Washington bought. It was like kegs of apple cider, kegs of whiskey, kegs of beer, like tons and tons. Get everybody drunk. And he'd say, "Did you like this party? Vote for me." And the people would literally vote right then and there. And they would say, "I cast a vote for George Washington." And it was called Viva Bache, and you say it with your voice, and that's how people voted. Some guy would write down, "Aha, one for George Washington," you know, and That's how they got people to vote back then. But they had to make it secret ballot when few elections down the road, mobs were intimidating people on the way to the polls and be like, if I hear you say the wrong name, dead, you know? So they had to make it secret ballot.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, George Washington tactics, I mean, kind of like eighth grade election. I mean,
Election Day was a holiday. Election Day was a holiday, and people took the day off so they could get drunk and vote.
Eighth grade election.
America.
Anyway, well, man, again, great conversation. Thanks again for all the stuff you bring to this. And hey, if you're listening and you like what you're hearing, and if we do get this video up on YouTube and you're watching this and you like it, hey, share it, whatever. Leave a comment. Rate us. Do all that stuff is asking you to do to go ahead and get people out there to hear that we are on doing this stuff, because we want to keep this going. I think we have a lot of great things that are coming down the way, a lot of the great things to talk about.
Yeah.
And so we will be back post-election, the Thursday. After the election, we'll be recording, and then we'll be having that episode come out. But this episode will be coming out whenever you hear it, because I'm going to have to do some editing, I think, on this one. And we'll see. Definitely have it out before on Monday at the latest. So there you go. Whatever day this is now. So
yeah.
There you go. Well, hey, Jared, thank you again. And there you go.
Yeah, man. I feel like if we're gonna be on video, I need some kind of visual sign off. I need to like finger guns, you know? It's like or just like thank you for listening, you know. So
I might just dab on.
Just kidding. Yeah. Just like okay. Finger guns, Spock, Seacrest out. That's my sign off now. So.
There you go. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. Well, again, hey, I am Bobby.
And this is Jared. Yeah. Sorry, I was distracted. I was thinking, am I Seacrest?
So again, hey, thanks again. You listen to the Frankenstein's podcast, and we appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you guys later. Bye.